ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
One more. There's a man.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank on Branham. It's Brian behind the glass, and it's a Taco Tuesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I trust everybody's doing good. You heard that the Rockets win yesterday. What a weird game that was for the Rockets yesterday, where they give up a massive – they didn't show up in the first half. They did not show up in the first half. They erased the entire deficit by the start of the fourth quarter. And then in the fourth quarter, they played like they did in the first half at the start of it. And then rally late, little miraculous finish, and then do what you were supposed to do in overtime. But a weird one last night, Blinkers.
Yeah, no doubt, Jeremy. I mean, when you look at how badly they played against the team that basically was resting all their stars, and it was, look, the Q Grimes show was unbelievable. He was phenomenal, and for most of the game, he was the best player on the floor. He was fantastic. And this was one of those games we've been talking about where you handle your business. We've been giving them props. They've been handling their business. You go down 25 to a Sixers team that's not playing Maxey and Embiid and George and all those guys, and yet you're scratching your temple going, well, why? What's going on? But then they found a way to win. I kept watching them continually, you know, kind of scratch and claw. Jabari was phenomenal in the third quarter. And then the fourth quarter, I was like, they're close, but I just don't see it. And then they started making a whole bunch of stupid mental mistakes and other things. And then the tip-in happens, and you're like, oh, my goodness, they're going to win this game in overtime, aren't they? And then, lo and behold, they found their stroke in the overtime and found a way to win.
Yeah, it was an eventful game. Watching it throughout the entire thing, the all I could think about was how in the world did they take Usman Garuba and Josh Christopher over Quentin Grimes?
I'm with you.
Because I remember that draft, and I was like, yeah, take Quentin. Come on, take Quentin. Take Quentin. And they went Usman Garuba and Josh Christopher. And look, Quentin Grimes didn't turn into this right away. It took him a little while, although he's always been like a rotational piece. Would he be popping off for 40 points like every other night if he was still with Dallas or if he was on a good team? Probably not, but it is showing you what he's capable of doing. Don't you think that guy could help a little bit? So, yes, like I don't blame Rafael Stone too much for a pick in the 20s, two picks in the 20s, but at the same time, my Houston bias really wanted Grimes, really wanted Shedd last year.
I was just gonna say that.
It would have been really nice to have both of those guys. How about you be a little bit of a homer? Come on, Rafael Stone, be a homer. Come
Jeremy,
on, Tillman, be a homer.
We see this all the time in football. We see the homegrown talent. We see the Kenyon Greens of the world and the guys that played close to home seem to find a way to their hometown NFL team quite frequently. I was with you last night. I'm watching this game and I'm going, I know Daryl when he was here and around this team. I know he kept an eye on U of H. And because Kelvin used to work with the franchise, he had connections in too. But I know that from the time that he came out, he was being compared to a Ray Allen type, to the fact that this team still desperately needs outside shooting. You don't need him to get 40 for you a night, but I was thinking the same thing all night long. Like, if you had a guy on the wing that could do that, and it wasn't just spot up and shoot, like, he was taking him off the dribble. He was shooting contested threes. He was getting to the basket. He made the majority of his free throws. You're looking at him and going, my goodness, and he's the perfect age to fit with the rest of this group. And that's all I could keep thinking about was those two guys from U of H, they did not want to get either guy, and I don't understand why. Like, yeah. Back in our day, we had the chance to draft Rashard Lewis. Rashard Lewis, his parents were so overwhelming and overbearing that Rudy and CD and the guys were like, yeah, we love him as a player. We're not going to do that because there's too much going on here at home. It'd be a distraction for him and for us. This is one that it just doesn't make sense to me. Both those guys would be great fits here.
Yeah, I think that if I had to guess, I think Rafael Stone has a body type, quite frankly. Like he likes certain size from his players. I think that's the hang up here. Because if you look at certain, like look who he's drafted. He's drafted I mean, early picture, kind of hard to say that this is how he drafts. You go Jabari, who's really long, right, can kind of play the three, but more of a four. But even at the four, he's pretty long, 6'10", long guy. Jalen Green might not be the tallest, but he has long reach and can jump through the roof, right? Amin Thompson, who's 6'7", can jump through the roof. I think he believes in NBA size. And Quentin Grimes, a little undersized for a 2-3. Jamal Shedd, a little undersized for a point guard in the NBA. That's my guess. Total guess. But I think that's what Rafael Stone kind of does.
But don't you feel like I look at him and I say, isn't he similar in body type to Atari Eason?
Quentin, no.
No?
Quentin's not nearly that tall.
Because Tari Eason, I think, is slight of build. I think at least from Quentin's standpoint, he's a little more filled out. But I don't think he's short by any means. I understand with Shedd, if you're onto something
he's
with 6'4". The body type. He looks bigger than that.
I mean, he's 6'4". I mean, Tari's like 6'7".
Yeah, but I mean, and this is, you know, Brian, don't save this. But I think give or take 3 inches, I would rather deal with the fact that Quentin Grimes has an NBA body. Tari's a little slight of build. I think, boy, I couldn't stop thinking about the fact that Quentin Grimes would be a perfect fit on this Rockets team.
Well, I'm talking about length.
Oh, no, I understand what you're saying, but I mean, they play two different positions, kind of, too, because Tari, you like that versatility of him playing, like, the up-tempo four. He plays the three. You know, he's obviously a defensive-minded guy, whereas you'll give up a few inches in height when you've got a guy that can shoot it the way Grimes shoots it. I hope that's not the case because I think, man, they really missed one there.
Yeah, I mean, you and I think they're thinking the same way. I'm just trying to put my feet into Rafael Stone's shoes. Like, I think that he likes length. Like, Josh Christopher wasn't that tall, but they view Josh Christopher as a point guard. And he was 6'4". Like, he was a 6'4 guy. Quentin Grimes, 6'4", but they don't really think he's a ball handler. And he's probably not. He's probably a 2 or 3. He's probably a wing player. Now, would that have prevented me from drafting the guy? No, absolutely not. Would it have prevented you from drafting the guy? No, absolutely not, because those dudes are winners. That's what Houston, they win.
And he's a shooter. They need that so much. That's why they went and got Reed Sheppard, because they needed shooting so desperately. He would have already been here. And for the fact that, you know, icing on the cake from the standpoint of what we're talking about, well, the guys that you drafted instead of him are no longer in the league.
Yeah. No, I'm with you 100%. The texter says Christopher wasn't big, but I think they wanted Christopher to be a point guard. And at 6'4", that is kind of big for a point guard. 6'4 playing the one is much different than 6'4 playing the two or the three. Now, I agree with you. He is, like, yoked. He is a massive dude. But, yeah, he went nuts yesterday. Second 40-plus game, like, in the last 2 weeks. The Mavericks are idiots. Like, I saw a graphic on, I think it was on the bus on the way over to the hotel, actually, where it showed the Mavs and, like, what their starting five could have been. Mm-hmm. It had Luka on it. I think it had Jalen Brunson on it. It had Quentin Grimes on
it.
It had Porzingis on it. I forget who they had as the four, but, like, a bunch of dudes that they had, and they just kind of left, you know, let them leave. Obviously, you know, Brunson free agent. They traded Luka, traded Grimes. Now, what I'm excited about for Grimes, he's a free agent at the end of the year. He's picking a very timely time to go off for 40 burgers every other week because he's gonna make a little bit of money.
I was going to say, four out of his last five games, he's, what, plus 30?
It's insane.
Yeah, he's been going off. So that's good for him.
He's become a lot better, like, getting to the basket and finishing around the rim too. Like, that is an area where I think he's elevated his game. But enough of my Cougar love when it comes to one Quentin Grimes. What did you think of the benching of Alpi Şengün?
It's very interesting, and I think that's one of those situations where you've got to give credit to Ime for being able to have the stones to do it and follow through with it and realize you get some guys in this league that, you know, especially when they start doing some things, that they are offended deeply if things like that happen. And I think that the fact that, yes, even in the post game, the way Ime kind of described the fact that, sure, he wasn't happy with it, but he stayed ready. When they needed him, he came through, and then in overtime, he was big. I thought it was very interesting, but I think sometimes desperate times deserve they call for desperate measures. They were getting their butts handed to them, and Philly was doing anything they wanted to. And if, as a coaching staff, they decided, hey, let's change the tempo, let's just run them into the ground and see what they got, because they were pretty shorthanded. And it worked. So I think that maybe there's more of a chance, too, that it backfires from an attitude perspective. If it fails, they continue to get blown out. Now Alpi's got a whole lot to stand on. But when your team turns it around, pulls a 180, and gets all the way back to almost even, then you got to basically tip your cap and go, okay, it worked. I get it.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. But look, they didn't come to play in the first half. Like, I support Ime Udoka. If you're going to have no energy, and he saw whatever he saw in Alpi, and he feels like he needs to bench a guy to A, send a message, B, give his team the best chance to win, cool. I like that kind of coaching. Like, and you better come to play. Like, yes, we talked about this yesterday. It's a 14.5-point favorite. It's a game that I think you can roll out of bed and win, but because of where you are in the standings, and yes, second in the West, but only 3.5 entering yesterday ahead of the 7 seed, like, these are important games. Like, these aren't games that you can just, you know, roll out of bed and then try to beat an NBA team. Like, they're on scholarship too. So I liked what Ime did. I thought Alpi responded to it well in overtime, and of course the final tip-in, I thought he responded to it very well. So that's promising to me. How about the ejections? One, Tari had already fouled out, so he got ejected on the way out, like whatever. Like, wow. He gave the other point, so that kind of hurts.
But let's not Because you and I have been talking about the fact that he doesn't play smart in key moments in the game. And that's one of those, you've already been disqualified, but the last thing you need to do on the way out is give them a chance for more points. You're chasing, you're playing from behind. You just burned a ton of energy, too. And then, one, I would question how far he took it just in terms of trying to get a scrap going. But I understand, initially, to stick up for himself, and I don't think he did anything wrong. But then you get disqualified on fouls, and then you, on top of it, get thrown out and give them free throws. I don't like that.
Free throw.
Free throw, right.
I hear you, and I'm not going to sit here and nitpick it. But NBA players get technicals. Like, it's the nature of the business. Like, close, tight game. Maybe don't compound a mistake. Like, I hear you on that. But I've also come to, accept the fact that pro guys get technicals. I agree with you, too, that he's probably a little too aggressive defensively. But it's, you don't want to corral him, though. Like, you want him to be that aggressive player. Like, I'd rather err on the side of that than err on the side of, hey, man, take it easy. And then you lose that aggression. So I think it's a very fine line with Tari. I thought that the chippiness, too, I'm usually a huge fan of the chippiness. I have no problem with the chippiness. I had no problem with Tari Eason. This was before the ejection. I had no problem with him trying to take the basketball away from that dude. The chippiness that bothered me, though, is, it's Philadelphia, man. This shouldn't be the game that you're chippy with. It shouldn't be a tight game late third, early fourth where you're trying to, give yourself a little extra juice by making it chippy. If you wanted to do that in the first half as a way to bring some juice to the game, okay. If it's against one of the better teams in the NBA, okay. But it was kind of like Big Brother picking on their very less fortunate 10 years younger brother. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's you shouldn't be getting in a scrap with Philly. This is a game you win by 20, and you got the reserves in the game for the final 6 minutes. So that kind of bothered me with the chippiness there. I like chippiness. I'm pro chippiness, but I don't think the chippiness should come against one of the worst teams in the NBA.
Well, you're right, but on top of that, I'm expecting Dylan Brooks at any point to get one too, because to his credit, he was pushing the envelope a little bit, but he didn't go over the top. I thought Jalen's was completely unnecessary. That was another one that I didn't think was smart, because you already had the dust up, the separation was happening, and you decided to basically take a sucker push where you just decided to walk up on a guy completely away from the play, push him in the chest, and then back up as quick as you could to let everybody else get in the way. And it was okay, I don't need all of that, especially if it could cost you, again, another free throw. But then what I did like was they did have each other's backs. They all kind of regrouped within the huddle, got the crowd hyped up even more, and used it to kind of funnel all that energy into, let's try one last push. And that push started to work almost immediately.
Yeah, it kind of got them going there a little bit. Although it came towards the end of that run, though. It was weird, but whatever. You win the game at the end of the day. Were you lucky? Yes. Should it have ever been a game? No, it shouldn't have. And then the last point of contention, I guess, to talk about, what did you make of the Fred VanVleet flagrant that got him ejected?
I may be in the minority here, and I know you're part Mexican. My big thing is when you look at that play and you look at everything that they said that he did, I disagree. He did not wind up. He did obviously come in 100 miles an hour. He got the ball first. I did not ever see a windup. Now, if you want to tell me the left hand on the small of the back on the way through played an impact on that, now I'll listen to that. But from the referee's explanation, it was unnecessary. He wound up, then he made contact, and every single time I saw that replay, I'm like, one, he didn't wind up. And two, it didn't deserve a flagrant two. I know he's ticked off because he was also fouled on the other end and they didn't call it. But when I go back and look at that replay every single time, they absolutely missed if they're going to tell me that he wound up and he got the ball. He maybe grazed the side of his head. But it wasn't excessive and it wasn't targeted. And I thought that, one, it shouldn't have been a flagrant two. But to me, I know that it's tough. You're in, you know, the Rockets gym. They're playing from behind. And all those things to where the referees want to kind of make sure that doesn't escalate anymore because you've already had an incident. But I wouldn't have even given it a flagrant one. I would have called it a common foul because of the fact that I've seen a whole hell of a lot worse and they didn't get ejected. And in a lot of cases, if you make contact with the ball first, they're not going to do anything.
How does that have anything to do with me being Mexican?
Minority here. I said I'm in the minority here, Jeremy.
Oh, I thought you meant because I was a
and
dog.
I'm Mexican.
No.
I see. Yeah. Interesting. Huh. All right. Maybe not so much in Houston, though. I didn't think it should have been an ejection. I'm with you. I didn't see a windup, and I didn't see a follow-through.
Exactly.
Like, it was a bit of a – it was a hard foul. I think flagrant one was fine. Like, I think that was a fine call. Although, I think it's a little soft. Like, I missed the glory days where that was just a good hard foul. Shoot two free throws and let's play ball. Ideally, in a perfect world for me, if I'm making the rules, that's a good clean foul. Shoot two free throws. Let's play some basketball.
Agreed.
In the new era – okay, flagrant one, two shots, the ball. But I didn't think that it warranted the ejection, and I thought that the explanation was wrong. I'm with you. I did not see a wind-up, and I didn't see a follow-through with as well. I'm with you, Blinker.
No, yeah. And you know what? Here's the other thing. I think we would be talking about this whole game a whole lot differently if they lost. The fact that they were somehow, some way pulling it out of their back pocket and got a win out of this made everything at least a deep breath. Ugh, okay, we can live with everything that happened. But if we're dissecting all of this and they lost to a Sixer team down all those players, this would be a totally different conversation.
Absolutely. I'm with you guys in agreement. I thought, you know, Fred VanVleet got ball. And also, like, kind of going to – because when you see the play live, you hear the contact. It was a massive thud. So I get the idea of maybe being a flagrant on more than a common foul. But the only way he can make that play is to sprint full speed. And he's not going to have time to stop. So I think there's got to be some, I guess, leeway given to a guy who's making a play on the ball, didn't go to the head, didn't wind up, didn't follow through. If they make contact because he's having to sprint, which, by the way, he was the only Rocket sprinting on that play. Mm-hmm. Where the fact that he was the only Rocket while the four Sixers were on the other side of the court was even more offensive to me. But, yeah, I didn't like that was an ejection, and especially since it was followed or preceded by Fred getting clearly whacked on his wrist on this three-point attempt and no call being made.
I'll say this, too. I mean, credit to Fred VanVleet for everything we just said about guys that are smart and not so smart in their temperament. If he got that decision, and we've seen this earlier in the year where he lost it, good on him for not losing his bleeping mind when he found out he was kicked out for that. Because I thought he was going
to
go nuts. I thought he was going
to
go nuts, but then I don't think they win the game.
But yeah, he handled it calmly.
Yeah, I don't think they win the game if he loses his mind.
Is it a foul if you hit the ball and then whenever you block the basketball and then you come down and you hit his forearm?
It's referee's discretion. You get ball first, then did it affect the shot? And if it's already ball first and that's causing the ball that would never get close to the rim, most times the officials will let it go. But if you graze the ball and then as he continues to go to the basket with it, you hit his forearm, then they would call that.
I couldn't really tell, but I thought that there was a chance where the defender for the Sixers hit the ball, blocked it, and then whenever he came down after touching the ball with the block, that's when he hit the forearm. So that one, to me, I was a little bit on the fence about, if I'm just being completely honest, mm-hmm. and, like, take away my homer glasses from it. I thought that the ejection was the worst call of the night. But, hey, Rockets win, 713-780-3776. A lot of the Hivers have some thoughts on the Rockets' performance. Also, what if I told you that there is a future point guard for the Rockets already on this team? It's a busy show. Lee Sterling, Paramount Sports, will be joining us a little bit later. We'll play some March Madness games. We'll play some Astro games. We're just a bunch of games on the Killer Bees today. A bunch of clowns. Cash them or trash them as well. We'll make mock drafts great again, too, if we have time. 713-780-ESPN, the HRNP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on the YouTube. at ESPN Houston. We're on the Twitter at ESPN975. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Brian's at Sack by BMAC. It is the Bees on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5. Have I told you about how great HR&P is lately? I have. You know I have, but that's because they are great. Human Resources and Payroll, it's in the name, HR&P. Cougar owned by my colleague, Go Cougs. Chris Fisher over there as well. He's an Aggie, so he's good people. A lot of great people over at HR&P. They have the best employees at HR&P. Business owners, let HR&P help you, though. You know, you might think that they're great people, but you need them to get some stuff done for you, and they're going to do that. They're going to get a lot of stuff done for you, whether it's HR, whether it's payroll, whether it's compliance, whether it's benefits administration, human capital management services. Maybe it's one of those things. Maybe it's three. Maybe it's all of those things. HR&P is here to help you. No boxes with HR&P. Doesn't matter how small the job, how big the job, HR&P will completely customize a plan for what you and your business needs. You have a problem, you have an issue, you want to take a little bit off your plate, HR&P will find a way to help. They do it in a way that's unique. Technology meets service. They have the best tech. You'll love that. But you're going to love their service. Guaranteed fulfillment. You'll never talk to a stranger. You'll be talking to someone who knows you and your business needs. Give them a call at 281-880-6525. Let HR&P customize a plan for you. 281-880-6525. Or check them out online at hrp.net. That's hrp.net.
ESPN.
97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You ever stay in rooms and they have lamps and you don't know how to turn them on?
Yeah.
Happens to me a lot. More than I care to admit. I feel like Hansen. Is it Hansen or Hansel? Hansel in Zoolander. Remember when Hansel and Zoolander are looking for the files and they're in the computer? And they go, they're in the computer? And then they break the computer trying to find the files that are inside the computer?
Nope.
That's how I feel like whenever I try to turn on
it. I couldn't stand it. We've had this conversation.
I
was so like turned off by it. I was like, I couldn't watch the first.
Turned off by it.
Just like I wasn't interested at all going, I can't watch any more of this.
Yeah, ball.
We're talking the first Zoolander, right?
Yeah.
Because the second one was universally awful. That's fine. Okay. But the first one?
The first one sucked.
Universally great. Man, I think it won an Oscar, pretty sure.
That's
yeah.
a bad
pretty
take.
Sure.
On Rotten Tomatoes, yeah.
Thursday.
Pretty sure they won an Oscar for Zoolander. I'm just kidding. They didn't win an Oscar. But
for
that
makeup?
Movie was, what's that?
For best makeup and costumes?
The Rotten Tomatoes score's got to be great, though.
I bet
I'm going to look
is.
It up.
Yeah, look it up for us. Eric says, don't ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. The Rockets sucked last night. There's truth to that. Like, mm-hmm. We probably shouldn't ignore the fact that they didn't play well, and especially in the first half. Like, I get that, but the reason I don't think they played well is because I don't think that they really took Philly seriously. Like, I think they expected to just coast in that game and be able to, like, easily win. So, that's better for me, I guess. I mean, I don't like seeing it. I don't like seeing the team coast, but it's going to happen in the NBA and pro ball. It's better than them playing, like, just bad. You know what I mean? Because,
yeah.
Like, why did they play bad in the first half? What is the reasoning why? I always like to look at the reasoning for things, the motive for things. The reason that they played bad is because they didn't show up. It's not because they were a bad basketball team. Yes, they played poorly. The production was poorly. But do I think they're a bad basketball team because of that first half yesterday? No. I just don't think that they were professionals and showed up.
Well, I mean, and Ime, after the game, took the blame for it and just said, and he hauled off the Utah game, the Sacramento game, this game, and said, I got to do a better job, and we got to do a better job of kind of motivating and dialing these guys in so that they do a better job. Because, you know, we've heard the old adage all the time, you play to the level of your competition, but it's so hyper-important for this young team to take every one of these games, you know, at the utmost importance, because they're right now the 2 seed. And as much as it's fluctuated in the Western Conference and where they were even a week or so ago, to be sitting that close to locking up a home court advantage and potentially the second best record in the West, those are all so important that they need to take advantage of every one of these games. That's one that, again, if you let that one slip away, now everything is magnified and blown up by 1,000. Thankful they won it, but now learn from it, do something about it.
Yeah, like I'm not pleased that of the game. Like, I'm not pleased that it happened. The first half was poor, but it is better, obviously, that they won, that they didn't lose, and I don't think that there's some, like, fundamental flaw with them. I just don't think they showed up to play that game. Texter, Branham's voice gives me the same feeling that I got when I was given a cancer diagnosis. I hope that you're doing better. I hope that you're in recovery there, Texter. Hopefully you're good to go. I hate to hear that about you. Hopefully he's okay. Maybe he's in remission. I hope you rung the bell. I mean that sincerely.
Is it a guy?
I couldn't tell you. How would I know that?
I don't know, but you said he. Hopefully he's okay. We don't know.
I tend to say he with all of our texters because we have a probably, not all, not 100%, but the majority of our audience are guys. So I usually jump to conclusions, and I shouldn't do that. That's my fault. That's my bad. Now, it is a fact that a majority of our listeners are men. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why I make that mistake. But you're right. I shouldn't
do that.
You got
me on it yesterday. I did it on the same kind of thing. You know, I did the same thing. I assumed.
Let's just be better. Let's be better with
fine.
That. Yeah. It's hard to do, though, knowing that most of our listeners are guys. But that's very disrespectful to our women listeners, and we love you, women.
Sorry, Twitch.
What's that?
Sorry, I apologize to Twitch.
No, but I do hope that Texter's in remission. Cancer's not anything to mess around with. That's hard stuff. Texter, right now, would you take Shed over Shepherd? Genuine question.
Ooh, boy, that's a
go
tough,
Cougs.
That's
Let's,
a
I'll
tough
take
question.
Him. I'll take him. No doubt about it. Give me Jamal. Give me Maul.
I understand your allegiances and all that. I'm gonna stick with Reed Shepherd for now, but that's a tough question because I really like Jamal Shedd's game.
Homer.
No, I'm not a homer. I'm sticking with the other guy.
Wasn't the Shingun benching more about matchups rather than discipline? I think it was both.
Yeah, look, we both have been talking about the fact they didn't show up. They didn't have energy. They really needed the energy of the scraps to kind of get focused, and then they focused in the third quarter. So he was not locked in. He seemed to start pouting a little bit when he wasn't, you know, getting touches or when certain plays didn't go his way. And I think that on top of that, the coaching staff saw an opportunity to try and get back in this game. That's the biggest comeback in the history of the franchise, 25 down. So there was a massive undertaking to get that done. And so, you know, you got desperate. You just said, you know, we're going to go small. They're not going deep onto their bench. Let's run them into the ground, see what happens, get back into it. And they did.
Yeah, yeah, and plus it didn't help that Alpe was off the floor when the Rockets made that big run, because now you're going to ride the hot hand. So, like, I think it was a combination of all of it. Is Morey on his way out? Seems like his time should be up. What do you think about that?
You know, the Paul George thing is what really hurts him, because otherwise they were kind of trusting that this was their savior that was going to do what he did for the Rockets and more. He re-ups Embiid. And then right after Embiid plays in the Olympics, doesn't get hurt again or anything else, and then has had this disaster of an injury-riddled season. And then he went out and spent all of his resources on Paul George, another guy that he's continued to chase throughout his career, just like he did with Melo, and then got Melo when Melo wasn't Melo anymore, and that one backfired. He chased Paul George to the bitter end, got him, thought he'd be a difference maker. He has absolutely backfired. And I think Philly fans are really, really getting tired of Daryl in a short period of time. I would say the leash is getting pretty short for Daryl Morey. He might survive one more year, but I would understand it if they wanted to make a change.
Yeah, plus it's Philly. Like, it feels like the hot seat gets hot.
The biggest thing he's got going for him is a contract that's for multiple more years that they don't want to pay at $12 million plus a year.
But he makes other than $12 million a year?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Don't you remember that he worked Tillman, that he knew Tillman wanted to get rid of him, and then Trump was meeting with Tillman and said, is that guy that made that China tweet still with you? And he's like, they chuckled, and Trump shook his head. And so Daryl knew that Tillman wasn't happy with him. He backdoored a deal with Philly and had it in his back pocket, went to Tillman and said, hey, I got a couple years left. You want to buy me out? I'm gone. Tillman gives him $10 million as a going-away present to get out of the rest of the deal, and he signs for $2 million more a year for like 5 years with Philly and just counts all the cash.
Must be nice. I wish I could be an overrated general manager and make that much money. The Rockets were very disappointing last night. The only positive thing out of it was they came up with a W. Were the Rockets bad, or did the 76ers just have a great night? They made everything in the first half.
The Rockets were bad.
Yeah, there's a reason that they made so many shots. They were wide open. They were wide open the entire first half. And NBA players are good. You leave them wide open, and that's what it looks like.
I would push back on the only thing that was good was the W, because I really liked the way Jabari played, especially in the third quarter.
He played well.
He played extremely well on both ends. He's been really good defensively. And you know, I don't think as many people pay attention to that, but he was huge. And without him, you don't win that game last night. So I give Jabari a big plus last night.
See, that's what I see in Jabari. Like, that's the player that I see. Now, he can't do that every night because he's not going to shoot like that every night, but that's the type of guy I see because I like to look at the positives of people. I like to look at the strengths of people, and that's what I see whenever I see Jabari. Texter, that's the cancer texter that texted us earlier. Cancer says, definitely a guy, perfectly healthy until the headache your voice gives me driving home every day. Well, I'm happy that you're doing well. Hopefully that you stay in remission, my man. Texter, Zoolander 1 and 2 were bad. I disagree with half of that take, and then the other half of that take lands you on Bad Take Boulevard, Texter. You can be there, right? You know, cuddled up and cozy with blankers
on Bad Take Boulevard.
Thanks, not liking Zoolander. Well, you didn't like Zoolander 1 either.
Okay, it's you're right. Take. And to each his own, and I did not care for it at all. I love how definitive
you are about it.
Well, I didn't like Napoleon Dynamite either, and everybody loved Napoleon Dynamite.
I didn't like Napoleon Dynamite either.
I'm just telling you random movies, Brian, that people like.
It's kind of similar comedy, though. I agree with Blinkers
on that. And mainstream liked it. I didn't.
Yeah. No, I totally understand where you're coming from. It's very stupid. And usually I don't like stupid funny. Like, I don't like stupid funny at all. I like witty funny. Zoolander might be the only stupid funny movie that I've ever liked, ever, because it is very stupid.
Pedro.
What is this, a Center Vance? I saw people making fun of the Daikin Park sign because it's very, very small on the side of Minute Maid Park. And they're like, what is this, a sign for ants? Needs to be at least 10 times larger. That Hanson's so hot right now, Hanson. All right, 713-780. Is it Hanson or Hansel? I forget. I think it's Hansel.
It's Hansel.
Yeah, it's Hansel. All right, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Lee Sterling coming up at the top of the hour. Get you ready for March. When we come back, let's discuss this roster crunch dilemma that the Houston Astros have themselves in, which I think is a good problem, right? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. You might have a property tax dilemma that you want to get rid of, and I know just the people to help you do that. Own well, ownwell.com. Being a homeowner isn't easy. We know that, right? Comes with a lot of responsibility, comes with a lot of cost, anxiety, stress, and it's no fun. And Own Well's here to help you with both and all of those things. Let them take a little bit off your plate, but also save you some money. How about that? Do I have your attention now? A lot of homeowners are overpaying on property taxes, and it shouldn't be you. Head to ownwell.com. Sign up in less than 3 minutes. It's going to take no time. Get their experts fighting for you. Their cutting-edge technology can start saving you some money with no upfront cost. Put your property tax savings back in your pocket. Reinvest it. Take the family on a vacation, your spouse to a nice dinner. Maybe buy your co-host a drink. Ownwell handles it all from the start to the finish and delivers top results, no upfront cost. Only pay if you save. It costs you nothing. You're only paying a little bit if they save you money. You can't beat that. Ownwell levels the playing field, eliminates the concern of paying too much on property tax. Here's some numbers for you. 86% of Ownwell's customers receive a reduction, with the average customer saving over $1,100. Sign up. It's free to do. No upfront cost. You could save up to $1,100. You could save over $1,100, perhaps. Why not do that? The deadline to protest May 15th, so don't run out of time. Save money on your property taxes with Ownwell. Sign up in less than 3 minutes. Start your protest today at ownwell.com. That's ownwell.com.
Subscribe to ESPN Houston for free on YouTube. What is this?
A center for ants?
What?
How can we be expected to teach children to learn how to read if they can't even fit inside the building?
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Blankers, can you name the movie?
Zoolander.
That's right. You
so
quoting
dumb.
Zoolander. You said you didn't like it. Chris and Humble says Beekeeper greater than Zoolander. Two things here. First off, Beekeeper's not funny. Is it a comedy?
No, it's not a comedy at all.
Yeah, you can't compare action to comedies. Different genres. And then secondly, Chris and Humble, you lost your texting privileges for the rest of the show. You can't text the rest of the day. We'll hear from you on Wednesday.
Tomatoes?
Chris and Humble. You think the Beekeeper's better than Zoolander?
No, I didn't say that.
Oh, but you might.
Well, that was his take. You said he agreed with you. He said beekeeper's better than Zoolander.
No, I would tell you Rotten Tomatoes says the beekeeper's better than Zoolander.
Yeah, Rotten Tomatoes has lost its fastball. It's like Verlander in San Francisco. What that is. Speaking of baseball, there's a bit of a roster crunch dilemma with the Astros, really, other than Cam Smith. Now, Cam Smith making the roster kind of throws another name into the hat and maybe gets rid of somebody else that you thought or we thought or everybody thought that could potentially make the Astros. Now, I did see that they sent down Nick Hernandez today, go Cougs. I saw that they sent down my guy, Forshay Whitcomb. They reassigned him to minor league camp. I imagine we'll see Forshay bouncing around with the Astros again. He won't do anything with the Astros. He'll go kill it in Sugar Land, but Forshay won't do anything with the Astros. So, these are kind of like, we'll do one Cam Smith one here. But is there room for both Cam Smith and Zach DiCenzo, do you think?
Yes. I think there is a scenario where you could have room for both of them, yes.
Interesting. Because if you keep, I think that there is a scenario where you can keep both of them as well. Now, I think it's unlikely. Now, if you do keep both of them, you're probably cutting Ben Gamel. Like, Ben Gamel, I don't see, and John Singleton, by the way.
I think John Singleton's gone.
I think he should be gone.
Yeah.
He's done nothing at the big league level. He's done nothing in spring training. I don't think you can continue to justify a roster spot for John Singleton. I'm a big, big John fan. He's jacked like me, and I like guys that are jacked like me. He used to have a lot of fun in his younger days. I have no problem with that. So I'm a big John Singleton fan, but he just hasn't cut it out as a big leaguer. And just because he's left-handed doesn't justify his roster spot. Like, you're left-handed and bad. Like, what good does that do? So if you keep Cam and DiCenzo, I think John Singleton and Ben Gamel are gone.
Yeah, I just, you know, DiCenzo is a guy that I mentioned at the start of camp that I was keeping a close eye on because he also came in, like, looked like he put on some muscle, but he came in great shape. I don't worry about his bat. I just worry about where you play him in the field. And now, because of the fact that he's hit well in the spring, I think there's a chance that they could find a way to keep him on the roster. Now, you're right. It's going to affect some people. I don't think John Singleton's going to make this team. He's out of options. I would be curious if they try and sign him to Sugarland or try to do something to keep him around. But, I mean, how many different lives is John Singleton going to have with the Astros? From the standpoint of, like, DiCenzo, because he's not a great defender, it's interesting because you got a couple of veterans that are definitely in the mix to try and make this ball club. And I don't know if it affects both of them. And then you kind of take a step back in terms of your backup utility type infielder type position if DiCenzo makes it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, see, I don't think it's a guarantee that DiCenzo hits at this level. Like, he's not so much of a, like, yes, it's his strong, he's a better hitter than he is a defender. He's athletic too, though. Like, he's kind of like a poor man's Cam Smith in that he can hit, now not to the level of Cam Smith, and he's a bit of an athlete too. Like, played shortstop in high school, can move around a little bit. That's why they think he can play, you know, either corner outfield spot. I don't think that they keep both of them on the big league roster because I think it's going to be hard to find both of them every day at bats. I think that it's maximum one of those two guys. Now, there is a scenario, I completely agree. I think there's a maximum one of those guys. And I also think there's a better chance that they don't keep either one as opposed to keeping both of them.
Now,
if I had to pick one, zero or two, I'm picking zero.
Now, if you had to
but
pick
I think one of them, I
which
think one
are you picking?
It. I think it might be Cam. I don't know. I go back and forth on this because I think there's like a 40% chance Cam makes the team. But if he makes the team, I don't think DiCenzo does. But I could also see them just be like, here you go, Zach. You've already started your clock. Like, let's give you the at-bats. Let's let Cam Smith learn right field. Because DiCenzo played right field in the Winter League. So it's tight. Like, it's tight. If they keep one, it's tight. I think there's a decent chance they don't keep either.
That's why I asked, because I think that obviously all the hype train, it can't get out of the station soon enough to get Cam Smith on this roster. But when we talk about and we highlight the fact that he hasn't had a whole lot of professional experience, even in the minor leagues, is he ready for all of this? And if he's not, then it's DiCenzo. But, you know, I think that because of the fact they both have been hitting so well, and we know that there's a lot of eyes on what's going on with Chaz and Jake and to see if those guys are going to be able to do anything for you in the outfield, that's where the question marks are. If those two guys can both help you, then I would like them to at least get creative, but I'm kind of with you. Like, if I have to choose between the two, DiCenzo at least has been there, done that, and had a little success offensively to where if he's played some right field, I'll start him in right field if I have to, but I kind of believe that they're going to give Chaz every opportunity to succeed as well as Jake, and to start the year, they're still going to start those two guys in the outfield.
So you think there's a better chance that there's zero than
I think,
two?
Yes.
Yeah, we're on the same page there. Okay, which backup infielder are you keeping? Like, even if you cut Singleton, it's going to be difficult for both Brendan Rodgers and Luis. Is it Guillermo? He says his name funny.
Guillermo.
Is it Guillermo? I thought he said it funny, but whatever. Which of those two, if you're only keeping one, do you keep?
See, I think offensively, that's where it comes down to. I think Guillermo's probably a better fielder, but I don't think Rodgers is a bad fielder. But I think between the two of them, it's who do you have more confidence in would be a better offensive player for you? And I go back and forth on this. I lean Rodgers.
I mean, Rodgers is easily the better offensive player. The thing that I struggle with, though, is that Rodgers only plays one position. Mm-hmm. Like, he only plays second, whereas Guillermo, it's actually pronounced Guillorme. Yes, I knew it was weird.
Really?
But, yeah, it's Guillorme. I just pulled it up on Baseball Reference. I heard Callis say it the other day. I'm like, who the heck is he talking about?
Because I thought ESPN guys, when I saw Mets games, I thought they said Guillermo.
I'm looking at a pro.
Well,
maybe that is the case. But yeah, Pro Baseball Reference has it Guillorme, and Callis said it the other day. I was like, who? Like, I had to do a triple, quadruple listen. But whatever. He plays multiple positions, so it comes down: do you want the offense or do you want the defense? Because if you want the, and like, yes, Rodgers can play a good defensive second base is a former Gold Glove winner, but he doesn't have the position flexibility. So if they want to keep a guy who has position flexibility, they go Guillorme. If they want the bat, they go Rodgers. And then Dubon, the fact that he can play multiple positions, maybe they can keep the bat in Rodgers. Mm-hmm. Now, there is an outside chance they could keep both, cut Singleton, cut Gamble, and then, like, both of those rookies that we just talked about aren't on the roster.
Yeah, I don't think at the lack of a price tag that Gamble cost you, too, that should prevent you from doing what you need to do. And I think that they do have so much versatility and flexibility with those three guys, you know, as backup infielders, including Dubon in with Rodgers and Guillermo. I thought it was always going to come down to either Guillermo or Rodgers. But
same.
Yeah, and I think if they move on from Gamble, then so be it.
I just don't want to put a whole lot of stock in Brendan Rodgers as the – I know he's probably the better offensive player, but just like his offense, when you look at his career numbers, his career OPS outside of Coors Field is 628. Like, he's – outside of Coors Field, he's not been a good hitter in his career. So maybe he's the better offensive player of these two, but I don't know if I'm making the decision because of his offense.
Touche. If you had to keep only – that's a good point. If you only had to keep one left-handed bat, Gamble or Singleton?
Gamble. Right now, Gamble, because Singleton's just been awful.
Yeah.
And it's not a great choice to make, but I would lean Gamble, and he had success last year at the end of the year.
I'm with you there. One thing that I'm – I don't want to use the word concerned, but has my attention. The one thing that has my attention – do you realize that the Astros are more than likely – like, if you sat down Joe Espada in the law firm of Murphy and Miller and you said you're getting through spring training healthy, we're not including McCullers, we're not including Luis Garcia because they're not going to be ready yet. If they could write down their 13 pitcher pitching staff, three of the guys in the bullpen don't look like they're going to start on opening day. So already a thin bullpen, right, after Hader and Abreu. They're more than likely going to start the regular season without three guys that they were probably counting on to be on their opening day roster. Caleb Ort, he hadn't started throwing yet. Have y'all seen him start throwing?
Nope.
I haven't heard that he started. Caleb Ort's going to be gone. Sean Dubin, I think he might be tossing now, but Sean Dubin's not going to be ready. And then Forrest Whitley now with his knee. So, like, it's already a thin bullpen, and now the Astros' pen has three guys that were more than likely, if everybody could get through healthy, going to be on the opening day roster that they're not going to have available. So that's kind of like, okay, like, let's see that bottom of the bullpen. Let's see those low-leverage guys, because that's already, before opening day's even started, has already taken a hit.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Look, I like the fact that there are other candidates that have performed well in spring training that, at least in the bullpen, could give you some options. But Ort was a guy that, before we started spring training, I was relying on, and we all had conversations about, as a guy that might be able to fill the role of the seventh inning guy. because he was so effective down the stretch, and now he hasn't started throwing yet. And now here we are again watching all these arms with all these injuries and crossing our fingers and hoping that at least one's going to step up and be ready maybe and speed up the clock to where we can, you know, have someone else in the mix. But it is something that you're right. You definitely have to keep an eye on, especially because you got rid of Presley and because Scott at the end of the year was not his first half self. And so there are some guys to kind of really watch. And you're also relying on a guy like Forrest Whitley, which you've never had to rely on before, too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's. I think Ridley's going to be ready for the start of the year, like with the knee. Like he's probably not going to be available. So Caleb Ort, you were counting on him to be in your bullpen, maybe even your seventh inning guy. Forrest Whitley, who had been really good in spring training, who they were even talking about being a multi-inning guy, like four or five outs maybe. And then Sean Dubin, who might have been the long guy, already without those three. Already without those three. So, like, we thought that the Astros' bullpen was thin, kind of top-heavy, and on top of that, opening day is going to roll around, and they're not going to have three of those guys. Hopefully, and it shouldn't be long term. Knock on wood. Pitcher's injury is kind of crazy, but
especially in this organization.
Yeah, I know, something to monitor. A texter: where's Bryce Matthews' timeline to the majors compared to Cam Smith? I feel like you hold Cam back, and they are your core moving forward when they're ready. I think Matthews has a chance to play significant games this year at second base. Now he has to be good in the minors, and then you might need like Dubon, Rogers to struggle, and Altuve to stay in left, because it looks like Matthews' future position is second. And I think that's part of the reason that they moved Altuve to left field, was because they think Bryce Matthews is their second baseman of the future. But ETA, July, August, at best, probably more realistic 2026.
Yeah, I was thinking late June, maybe July, around All-Star break, if he's raking in the minor leagues and you're struggling to find consistency in the infield, specifically second base, that there'd be a chance. But I think that, you know, I think they started out thinking maybe third, maybe second. And right now it looks like they probably are going to probably kind of speed him through as a second baseman if it means that he's hitting the ball in the minor leagues and it gives you a better option than the guys that we just got done talking about.
Yeah, there is some league-wide fear that he's not great hitting secondary pitches. So, like, he needs to improve in that area. But I would say he's probably 6 to 12 months behind Cam Smith in relation. Now, hopefully Matthews is the future at second base. Cam Smith locks down one of these corner positions, and they are part of the future. I think that they certainly hope that. Texture, what about Brian King? Yeah, Brian King's going to be – he's pitching, right? I haven't heard of an injury with Brian King. Brian King's firmly in my bullpen. My bullpen as of yesterday, because I do it every Monday. My bullpen is Hader. This is in order. This is in order from high leverage to low leverage.
Okay.
Hader, Abreu, Taylor with an E. Scott, Brian King – this is where I have to get on the edge of my seat here. Rafael Montero.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I think he makes the team. Logan Van Way, who's been killing it. Steven, I believe it's Steven. Steven Okert, who's your loogie. Well, you can't really use a loogie anymore, but he's a loogie. And then this Luis Contreras guy who's been lighting it up. And again, I think Caleb Ort, Forrest Whitley, and Sean Dubin, who would have all been in this rotation, I think that they're all going to start the year on the IL.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think that it's interesting that, you know, the guys we talked about that we relied on. I mean, even when you said Taylor Scott, I was like, yeah, but which one? Like, I was so, like, supportive and saying, Astros, great find on this guy. Pulled him out of nowhere, and he's just pitching his tail off. And then I think that they just worked him into exhaustion. And the key was, wasn't that where late in the season he got the opener start and they pushed him too far over, like, 35, 40 pitches? And he was never the same after that. And I'm like, okay, can he be – I understand it's tough to have the first half that he had again, but hopefully he can – you know, if he falls back to the mean, he's more like first half Scott instead of second half Scott. So I cringe a little bit even having him there in the seventh inning.
Yeah, there's a very real chance that last year was his career year. Like,
maybe.
It was a year that came out of nowhere. The advanced numbers, like the predictive numbers, don't necessarily love him. Like, they think his ERA was better than it should have been. But, like, I'm looking at his projections right now. They have him for a 350 ERA. I'd sign up for a Taylor with an E. Scott, a 350 ERA right now.
Yeah, I would too.
Take that.
I would.
Like, yeah, that's not too far into the regression mean, right?
No, like, but like I said, I thought – you know, I would hope that Ort isn't a serious injury and that Ort, at a certain point, not too far down the road, is my seventh inning guy.
Yeah, me too. Like, I wanted him to be the seventh inning guy, but he faces hitters Tuesday, according to Brian McTaggart. He'll throw a live BP session Thursday.
Next week?
I guess this week, Thursday.
Oh, okay, because I was going to say, if he's facing Tuesday, if he's, is he pitching
I still
today?
Don't think it's enough time.
No, it's not to be ready for opening day.
Yeah, I don't think it's enough time to be ready.
I agree.
Yeah, I think he's starting the year on the IL. All right, 713-780-ESPN-HRNP listener line. Lee Sterling, who hands out winners like people hand out candy on Halloween. Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports going to hand you some March Madness winners when we return. It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, right here before we go to the break, I want to tell you about my good friend Doc Linville and all the great that he can do right here in Houston if you're losing your hair. If you're losing your hair, you've got pattern baldness, and you just don't think there's any solution for you, and you don't want to try all the gimmicky stuff you see on TV, I encourage you to go to 975hair.com because you can get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff. They can explain to you exactly how they can help, how it's your own hair, how it's going to grow and be with you for the long haul and stay for the rest of your life, and you're going to see results almost immediately. If that sounds like something you're interested in, let me also tell you that by setting up your consultation at 975hair.com, you get it for free. Most people off the street pay $150. You don't pay a dime. You don't sign on the dotted line. You don't commit to anything. You just go in and have them explain to you, PRP treatments and the NeoGraft procedure. One, if not both, and I used both in my case, are game changers. The PRP is like fertilizing your lawn. There's still hair there. You just want it to be thicker, stronger, and longer like it was in your heyday. And then from the standpoint of the NeoGraft procedure, it's actually taking hair from where you're never going to lose it, and genetically, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, and putting it where you need it most. A lot of people need it like me with the hairline in front. Some people need it with the bald spot up on top and back. Wherever you need it, they're going to take care of it for you, and it's going to be a game changer because immediately you're going to see the follicles that are there, and you're going to be visible to the eye. In 6 to 9 months, you will see them growing, getting stronger and longer, and giving you a full coverage area that you didn't think you could ever get back. Check them out today. Go to 975hair.com, set up that consultation, and tell them Joel Blank sent you by.
ESPN 97.5.
Please stand by.